With the NBA playoffs coming back, something we're going to be seeing a lot is every player's fresh new cut. But you know what else needs a fresh new cut? Your lawn. That's why you should hit up Tavon's Lawn Care. Tavon's Lawn Care LLC is a black family-owned business located in York, Pennsylvania. Tavon's Lawn Care, or TLC for short, since they provide each job with tender love and care, has been in business for over 10 years. Founded by owner Tavon Parker, TLC aims to provide employment for underprivileged youth while providing great service at a reasonable rate. Visit Tavon's Lawn Care LLC or Tavon's Lawn Care on Facebook and Instagram to view their portfolio and request your cost-free quote today.
Welcome back, everybody. Episode 20 of the All In Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Eli Cooper. My other co-host, Mike Badzik, is here as well. How's it going, Mike?
It's going good, man. How are you?
Doing good, man. 20th episode, man. 20 in now. And today's a special one for those of you who are tuning in through audio. We have the newest members of the All In Network, our All In Politics members. Walt Burrell and my dad, Rob Cooper. How you guys doing?
What's going on, fellas? We're happy to be here with All In. You know, we always had that. We always been family, and we always, had that synergy with the two podcasts. But it always makes sense to kind of bring it all together, man, on this amazing platform. What do you think, Walt?
Oh, indeed. You branch out to more viewers and get more subscribers. Get this information out there.
Yeah, man, we certainly appreciate you guys joining. We're excited about everything that you guys bring to the network and really our first political podcast that we're going to have joining us. And you guys are not new to this, as most of our other shows that have joined are. You guys were doing Real to Real together for a while and before joining us. So talk a little bit about that experience and, you know, what went into starting that podcast.
I'll start. The Real to Real concept, this really was Walt's baby, and it really came from us. You know, we discuss and stay in tune in politics for almost 30 years, discussing politics and looking at, pop culture and social justice. Of course, everything intensified back in 2016, where the American electorate decided to go in full-blown fascism and really kind of bring the country to where it's at right now, where it's damn near on his knees. So we just try to connect and really kind of build on some, certain topics, but we really want to be in our podcast be solution oriented. We just don't want to, cry and complain about what's going on. We want to, kind of just give the people some thought-provoking ideals of what they could do to spark change.
Yeah, and that's what I really like about the idea is, you guys are very high energy, both of you, and, I think it's good to energize people, especially like in this period. You mentioned the full-blown fascism and the way Donald Trump's running the country is disheartening for a lot of people, but, you re-energize them and you energize them to go out and vote, do, protest, try to make change. And I will say for me, I'm really excited you guys are joining us too, because, we have guests on all the time and, I usually ask them like how they know Coop and stuff. And they all say, well, I know the legend, actually. I know Coop's dad, Rob Coop Jr. He's the legend. So this is a big honor for me to have you guys with us. Talk about really, going forward here, and you took a break from Real to Real, and now you decide like, this is a good time. So what are you seeing going on right now that you decided this would be a great time to bring it back?
Like we said, we got a bigger platform, and then we're reaching a younger demographics with you guys. Then the other component is just like I said, other platforms of social networking. I don't know why I got dark all of a sudden. sorry about that. So yeah, just to get a branch out of a vast audience and just to bring more information to the people, because as you see, these news cycles, and from what me and Rob talked about in our previous episode, as far as corporate media isn't going to filter in what you need to know about what's going on in the world around you. They have their sound bites, they have their pundits, they have their political analysts that, you know, scope out a story and put their own political spin on it. So what we want to do is like bring the backstory to it and bring the factors to the forefront so everybody can be well made aware of what's going on.
And I think that's the most important thing, is making everybody aware of what's actually going on. Because like you said, like corporate media misleads people, because there's so many of these media outlets are biased. You know, obviously Fox News is tailored towards right wing politicians and things like that. And even, you know, MSNBC, CNN, things like that have their biases that don't always benefit our people, or most of the time don't benefit us at all. So it's important that we have these outlets where we can share the real truth, our truth, and make sure that people are aware of what's actually happening, giving context and actual solutions. So when it comes to you guys', you know, idea, this podcast, and you're talking about like real solutions, what are things people can be doing right now in a time like this to, you know, help further the cause?
Well, exactly what you guys are doing right now. You know, I know one time, you know, Mike, I commend you and Elijah, and, you know, you young guys and the young people overall. Really, the first part of this all is really taking it to the streets, to borrow the Doobie Brothers song that Bernie Sanders would play at the end of his campaign rallies. And I'll be the first to tell you guys, and Walt will be this, and Elijah knows this by me being his dad. You know, everyone in our household was on the Bernie train except for me, you know. You know, so they had to kind of bring me on to the Bernie train. But as I really had an opportunity to sit down and listen to, you know, some of the solutions that he presented back in 2016 and also in this latest campaign, you know, I really, you know, sat back and I listened. I said, man, this guy is making a lot of sense. And then the other piece, you know, as a 51-year-old black man here in America, I have to realize that, you know, I've already lived half a century, and I've seen the way politics has worked, you know, and I followed politics for about 40 years. And quite frankly, you know, we've seen really no real progress on the political front. So I thought it would be very selfish for me as a 51-year-old, you know, male to impose my beliefs into the political you know, prospects, where it's really, you know, I believe that this country is you guys' country. This is you guys going to be living there hopefully much longer than us. You know, it's old fogies on the other side. So, you know, I kind of wish that my generation will sit back and just listen to the youth, because ultimately it's what you guys are the ones now are in a position to make things happen. And that's exactly what we're seeing right now when you know, just because CNN, as you guys mentioned, corporate media, you know, turned the cameras off of the protests, you guys are still out there on the streets right now. And you guys are you know, promoting change. And I said this a couple times with Walt. You look at the just getting back onto the national elections, you see, I think there's Biden right now that's leading Trump probably in most opinion polls, you know, anywhere from 8 to 12 points, according to the opinion polls. Now, we know the opinion polls don't vote. We need to get out there and vote and make things happen. But what I find real interesting in following, you know, the political process for, you know, several years. I think I voted in my first presidential election in 1988. What I've seen is, you know, even going back 4 years ago, in the development that we live, you know, every other house had a Trump sign on their lawn, and mm-hmm. maybe every five houses, every now and then you would see a Hillary sign. But as I find this interesting, and we're turning a corner. We're already in July. And, you know, I see very few Trump signs out there, and I actually have seen zero Biden signs. So that just goes to show you that, you know, here's a guy who's up 10, 12 points in the polls, and no one seems to be excited about the guy who's in the lead. Right. So what that tells me is that you guys who are out there on the streets are the ones that are making things happen right now. And you guys are starting to turn the tides. And quite frankly, you have the eyes and ears of the establishment wide open. We're starting to see some changes from corporate America. We're starting to see, you know, some changes from other institutionalized places. You know, and of course the pandemic has helped push that along and push along the sense of urgency of everything.
Yeah, it's crazy because this movement is a lot different than it was 4 years ago. I think it's certainly lasted longer. It's now become one of the largest movements in American history, just from how long the protests have lasted and how many there have been. In 4 years, the amount of people who sympathize or side with the Black Lives Matter movement has doubled from about 35% to 70%, according to like recent polls and stuff like that, which is crazy to me to think about that it could double like that in such a short time. And like you said, I think it's mostly because our generation is who's leading it now. And I think our generation is just, you know, more progressive in general.
Yeah.
And that's why you're seeing such a big shift.
Yeah, and it is a huge shift. And, you know, I think the Bernie movement was really strong. And I don't know if, you know, Biden was never going to be able to match the energy of Bernie's base. So now that Bernie is, you know, out of it now, what would you say to someone who's kind of now they're thinking, you know, well, Biden sucks, Trump sucks. Like, should I not vote? Should I vote for Trump? Like, is Biden the lesser of the two evils? Like, kind of what's your take on that? I know some people are saying, I'm not voting for Biden because of his record. And I think that's a legitimate argument. But I'm interested to hear you guys' thoughts.
I mean, me and Rob talked about it on a couple of podcasts as well. Idealistically, we want both of them out of there, to get the best of the lesser of the two evils. I mean, it would be Biden just based off his record alone as how he ran his policies and form with Obama. But let's make this be clear that Obama suits the same individuals behind the scenes that Trump does. One gives it to you in a sour form and one gives it to you in a sweet form. So we have to have a candidate or somebody that's actually grassrooted and for the people and is actually going to get some of these policies and things passed through legislation. Because at the end of the day, the government is supposed to be formed of the people, not some semi-fascist group or whatever else that takes you on a whole nother playing field. We need to bring it back to who originated, who it was for, which the Constitution states and claims for.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, as you mentioned, Mike, you know, voting for the lesser of two evil. I mean, I've seen that in the election, like I mentioned, particularly in the presidential elections. You know, I've seen that since we started voting since I started voting in 1988. And what I was always taught, you know, when you vote for the lesser two evils, you still have evil. But I think where we're going at here, and I'm just going to put it kind of as plain and simple, you know, depending on what we got to look at what the mission is. And I think there is a mission right now. And I think just if you're listening to what's going on in the streets, I think the number one goal is the removal of Donald Trump right now. So here you have a direct target, you know what I mean? So which I think any successful mission is that, you know, you need to have that goal in mind. And the other piece too, though, with the young folks in the streets, I think we have, you know, promoted, you know, or I guess starting to see some changes, where now you I don't know if you guys have been following the news that closely. I know you guys more sports oriented, but on the political side, you're starting to see a coalition between Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden. So, you know, regardless of what we think about, you know, Joe, and I think Joe had to look at it and reevaluate where his stance was when you see what's going on in the streets, and him and Bernie has gotten together. I will encourage folks to look at that. They, you know, they've actually put out a high level position paper on many issues from the Green New Deal, healthcare, the economy, and some other things. So I encourage the audience to go, you know, kind of Google that and see, you know, see what they put down on paper so far. And the other encouraging piece that I like about that is Bernie Sanders said, this is just the first step. By all means, are they not, they're not done yet. The Democratic convention comes up next month in the middle of August. That's when they will establish their Democratic platform. So this is just the beginning pieces. And again, it's something that, you know, is not that impressive to me, but it's a lot better than what the positions that Biden had running in the primary. So I see that at least he's gotten his ears open. But ultimately, we're going to continue to have to let our voices be heard. I think one of the things that Bernie Sanders has been focusing on that's I think it's going underreported is he's not focusing so much on the national elections between Biden and Trump, but really focusing on the down ballots and getting folks who are a little bit closer to the, you know, the eyes and ears of the people, and get them into positions where they can actually force the change. Anyone who thinks that change is going to come from two 80-year-old dudes, man, who pretty much lived their lives and in fact pretty much have collected their full retirement in full, think that, you know, those guys are going to all of a sudden, you know, make a change on their own. You know, you're just asking for more misery. And I think right now, I think American people are I know me as 51 years old, I'm tired of it. And really, you guys in your mid-20s, you know, maybe, you know, starting to sniff on 30, you know, I know you guys are not having it.
Yeah. Right. And to me, that's the biggest thing is that, you know, Joe Biden certainly is the lesser of two evils. But the biggest thing is that Joe Biden can cooperate with other progressives who actually have our best interests in mind to get some of the things that we want done. He ain't going to get them all done, but he will at least get some of the things done that we want. You know what I mean? He'll listen to Bernie Sanders, as he's shown, you know what I mean? And make certain policy changes. The fact that he just believes in science in general is a plus and a huge upgrade over Trump.
Right.
Because, like, you know what I mean? The taking care of the planet is important. I want to be able to breathe, you know what I mean? In 50 years. So, you know, that kind of stuff is important, especially now. And like you said, these two aren't the only ones that are going to impact the changes that we seek. It's going to be the down ballots. It's going to be voting for Congress and senators and things like that. Your local government, those are the people who, like your mayors and things like that, those are the people who actually affect police.
That's right.
Policies and things like that. Those are the people that you really need to be paying attention to if you want to end things like police brutality. They handle that. Trump and Biden have nothing, really have a very small part, if at all, in that.
Right.
You know, just like we saw in Colorado with the you know, accountability thing that they just kind of put down, or what did they end there in Colorado? If anyone can think of it, it was something about immunity or something like that, that they ended in Colorado.
Right.
That happened all on a local level. There was nothing that Trump or anyone else had to do with that. But, you know, and I think this election is much bigger than just who runs in 2020. It's about opening doors for Andrew Yang and those kind of guys coming up in the future who are more and more progressive and stuff like that. That's, you know, that's just a name, but it opens it up for Kamala, you know, coming up in the future, things like that. So it's way bigger. This election is way bigger than like what's going to happen in the next 4 years as far as the movement goes. You got to get Trump out of office so that we can actually start moving in the right direction. Cause that, you know, it's going to happen regardless, you know, whether he's in or not, but it's going to be much quicker if he's not.
You know, and it's interesting, you know, one of the things that you mentioned about science, you know, having someone who believes in science is, I think it's real, real critical. I think if anything that this COVID-19 coronavirus really exposed anything was, you know, is the belief in being able to go with the data and go with the science. And I'll just say, go with math and science, period. I saw, you know, a couple of memes I thought were real funny about, you know, folks who are out there making, you know, statements and claims about, you know, how unnecessary it is to wear a mask or do social distancing. They said, well, these are the same people that we remember in science class, you know, peeling glue off their fingers, you know what I mean? So,
right.
You know, these are, and it's so true, you know, and you know, it made me wonder, you know, when I saw, you know, saw how poorly this coronavirus was managed, you know, and how just the lack of respect or lack of attention to science, you know, really actually kind of, you know, made me think more of about the Green New Deal, which quite frankly, the environment piece was something that I never really thought about. I mean, it was kind of like, oh, it's here and there, you know what I mean? But it was never one of the issues that was on the highest of my, on my political issues. I kind of, you know, I'm there with the economy and social justice, and I'm, you know, I'm kind of cool with, you know, how you know, everything else kind of plays out. But really, this is, you know, these guys are this disastrous, you know, handling a virus, which the rest of the world handled fairly decently. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're living in a country, you know, that now has over 3 million cases and over, you know, 135,000 deaths, you know, where you're like the closest competitor to you is like 75,000 deaths below you, you know what I mean? So, you know, clearly we've mismanaged this, and if they're mismanaging this in just this past six months, you know, what have they done over the past 2 to 3 decades with our environment? So I'm saying, you know, if the COVID-19 and the virus is bad, just by the way we've managed it, we're in some serious trouble, and that actually forced me, as someone again who's never really paid attention to it, to really pay attention to the environment. Now I know you guys, I mean the younger generation has you know, kept that in the forefront of our ideals, because again, you guys are gonna, you know, hopefully you guys are gonna be here, you know, a lot longer than the middle-aged population.
Yeah, and I think that's a really big thing too, and that's encouraging when you look at some of these, you know, elections from 2018, the midterms, where we saw a big influx of young Democratic, a lot of women, people of color, and those people have had a lot of change in the House of Representatives. Now they've passed over 200 bills, and you know, they go to the Grim Reaper and die in the Senate, but they've fought for things like climate change, and even, you know, when you talk about the Biden and Bernie you know, kind of meeting of the minds, I think they were able to reduce his carbon neutral target date by like 10 to 15 years. So like, that's huge. Like just there, you know, and Biden, you're right. Like his record in the past is shaky and a lot of topics, especially compared to the progressive agenda of today. You know, it's not flawless by any means, but, you know, if he continues to work with guys like Bernie and maybe AOC and some of these young Democratic, you know, House of Representative people, I think that he can get there. I really do. I'm not sure that he's going to have the change that we're hoping for, but maybe some building blocks for the future.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing, just transition a little bit into the sports world as we see, you know, it was the sports world and the NBA in particular that actually forced America to make this change, because I truly believe if the NBA did not stop on that abruptly, on that night, I believe it was March 11th, I believe it was.
Yes.
I think the America would have went on with business as usual for as long as they can. And we probably, you know, be looking at maybe 200,000 lives at this point, lost, due to, the virus. So, you know, I'm starting to see, you know, the younger athletes and watching them, you know, how they are addressing social issues, where, you know, I think you guys, I think it was one of your first podcasts I listened to, when one of your first or second ones, you talked about Michael Jordan, who's more or less in my era, you know, where he made the comment about Republicans buy sneakers also, you know, and you know, it's interesting. I know you guys, how ridiculous that sounds to you guys, but primarily that was in the 80s and 90s. That was the kind of the ideal of how the sports figures behaved. That was the way that they behaved. I will tell you, in the 60s and 70s, when, you know, when I was a real young kid, the athletes were far more outspoken and required, you know, political, you know, change. Muhammad Ali being the main figure there, and a lot of, you know, athletes kind of got behind him. But again, Muhammad Ali was in an individual sport. You know, he didn't have to rely on teammates. He didn't have to rely on backlash in the locker room. So, you know, he was kind of free, you know, and you know, he was the highest paid athlete at his time. So he had the ability to kind of speak out, to the point where many of the other athletes did not have to. And in fact, back in those days, the boxers were the highest paid, you know, athletes on the planet. But it's refreshing, really, to see, whether you agree with them or not, you know, it's refreshing to see Kyrie come out and make some points. It's refreshing to see, you know, LeBron James. Again, I was not a LeBron James fan as far as on the court, but man, do I really admire the stance that he's taken over the last few years off the court.
Agreed. I think, especially when it comes to like LeBron, and LeBron hasn't just been one of the people who talks about it. He's been pretty vocal, like he's been pretty actionable. Like, you know, I think what he's doing with the I Promise School and stuff like that is super important. I think it's the biggest thing is like athletes don't really just talk about it either. They're, you know, trying to do whatever they can to affect real change and things like that. So I think that's important. And, you know, when it comes to the sports, like, I think the NBA probably handled COVID better than any other sport so far. However, I don't know so much about them coming back now. Right now, it looks a little bit sketchy. So let's talk about that a little bit. Walt, what do you think about the NBA coming back? Actually, in the next about 2 weeks here, they're going to be returning back to play.
I have a very serious concern about it. And it's just for the simple fact that, and I've spoken to Rob behind the scenes as well, as far as them actually getting a gauge on this COVID, like they're saying it's airborne, they're saying it can stay on surfaces. The communicable aspect of it, of how it's transcending these other things, is like real scary. So even if they were to initiate the season, there would have to be some very astringent things placed in place to protect the players as well as the fan base. And without those things even remotely in place right now, to make a short-term determination to jump in, I just think is very it's crazy. I mean, and it's also scary.
It is scary. And you look at Rob jump in here, of course. I just wanted to say, like, the MLS Backers tournament, not that we're paying too much attention to that, but like they're having a ton of problems. They're trying to do it in Florida too, kind of a similar model almost. And they've had teams drop out already. They've had games postponed because of positive tests. It's looking shaky.
You know, and speaking of Florida, you know, you're looking at it, I believe either today or yesterday, they had a spike of 15,000 cases, which is a record. So, you know, we remember how bad it was in New York and how bad it was in some other places, but they had 15,000 cases in one day. So you can now start to see some of the uneasiness of some of the NBA players. And I don't know if we have any footage on Joel Embiid when he was stepping in the I think going on to the plane or going on to his car to head down to Florida.
He's getting out of the car.
Yeah, he got into a full hazmat, you know, you know, hazmat suit. And, you know, I know he's a joker, but he didn't look like he was joking at all.
No, he wasn't.
You know, you know, so this is where we're at. So, you know, with the NBA again being in the, I think as you mentioned, Elijah, they were in the forefront of bringing this virus, bringing the awareness of this virus and how serious it is to the forefront of the American public. I think right now they're really going to have to reconsider what their plans are Because again, you can see how we as Americans are you know, really influenced by what goes on in the four major sports.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think at the time, right, when they were negotiating this restart, it was kind of okay. The curve seemed to be flattening because most places hadn't opened back up yet. And I think just way too many states opened up too early. And we're seeing the results of that with all these spikes and cases and things like that. And now, I mean, even the NBA players themselves had a lot of tests, positive tests come back. Like Spencer right. Dinwiddie tested twice for Corona and just flat out said, you know what, I'm not going. And there were multiple guys from the Kings, had like three or four players that tested positive before they headed down. And that to me is the most concerning thing, is like guys were testing positive before heading into the bubble. And now you're going to have them all interacting and in the same place and in a state where, and I get it. They're like sealed. They're supposed to be, you know, sealed off, but people break rules all the time. And that's really all that right. this virus right. takes is like someone doing something stupid and having a huge outbreak down there. And then what, like how bad of a look would that be for the NBA? Because you were supposed to be keeping these guys, you know, safe and secure and all that. I wouldn't be surprised if we see them shut back down after two or three weeks, because it gets uncontrollable. Because I don't know. I don't think we handled this. I think we opened up too. A lot of states opened up too soon. Other than like us, and I think New York handled it well, given the amount of people that they have. But like, I don't think a lot of states handled this well at all.
No. We saw it. I mean, the old cliche that was created out of this over the last four months is, you know, profits over people. You know, and I wanted to ask you guys something about the NBA, because I know you guys, you know, are following this, you know, real closely, but. You know, I think at what point do we, and I want to look inside the game a little bit, do we put the integrity of the game, you know, in question now, you know, where we start doing, you know, you got LeBron who's chasing, what number ring is this if he wins?
Okay, he's going for four, yeah.
So you got LeBron chasing his fourth ring, and let's say, you know, he's successful in getting this, you know, is this a legit ring for him? Is there going to be an asterisk there? You know what I mean? So at what point do we start to put the integrity of the game for future generations to kind of look back? This is not the first time. I mean, of course, this is our first time in our lifetime that we've seen, you know, sports take a pause for real life situations. You know, if you guys don't know how far historians that you guys are, but, you know, we saw, you know, baseball, which was the king. You know, even when I was a kid, up until maybe the 80s, maybe the mid 80s, when, you know, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson kind of, you know, put the NBA on a pedestal, and the NFL, you know, really started to get the, you know, the glamour and glitzies with the Super Bowl. But, you know, growing up, I mean, it was baseball was king, and we saw baseball, you know, take a pause for World War II, where a lot of the athletes had to, you know, put the ball and the bat down to go, you know, serve the country and fight, you know, several years, you know, in a war. And you see a lot of asterisks there, and that's, you know, understandable. But, you know, that's one thing as competitors, you know, they don't like to see asterisks next to their names. And I think at what point, you know, do we kind of look at this, you know, maybe to save the integrity of the game, that we just kind of put this on a wrap and perhaps look to just restart it, you know, restart fresh for 2021.
Yeah, that's something that we've talked about on the show before, is, you know, is there going to be an asterisk on this season? I think originally we said no, maybe the answer is still no, but with these cases going up, and yeah, you're right, Rob, Florida's probably the worst possible state they could have done this in, because I think they opened up probably sooner than other, mostly anybody, and the case uptick is just insane right now. But like, it's going, yeah, well, you know, it's going to happen, right? Like one of these star players, or at least a number of role or key players on these big teams, are going to get the coronavirus. They're going to test positive. And, you know, I guess the argument against it as well, there's injuries in the playoffs every year. You know, you can make the argument for against the Warriors. I know people make this against the Warriors that they faced a lot of injuries. I know Eli hates to hear that, but I think a lot of that's overblown. But, you know, people say, you know, there's injuries every year. It's just a part of the game. Well, these aren't really injuries. These are just, this is a pandemic that, you know, these people were lives, right? Like, these are, this is a deadly virus. Maybe it's not as deadly for people in the shape of these NBA players, but it's still deadly to some degree, and it spreads very quickly. So, you know, if they go to the finals and LeBron James tests positive, but he's asymptomatic, you know, one, I'd be interested to see if they'd even tell us. And two, they wouldn't tell us, right? He would just play. He would just play. If he was asymptomatic, would he just, maybe that's a different discussion. But, you know, it's going to happen, though. Like, somebody's going to test positive. And, you know, I think that whoever wins it, the other 29 teams and the other 29 fan bases in the league, already at this point, just of what we've had already, not including what's still to come with this, with the more positive tests, the longer they're in the bubble, the more likely there's going to be more tests. I think they're going to have an asterisk on it for sure. So it does definitely question the integrity.
So let's let Walt chime in here. What do you think about NBA restarting in this pandemic?
It's twofold that I did have a concern with. One is probability, and the second is liability. So like I said, with the contamination and the odds of somebody catching it, I mean, it's likely. Like, we have entertainers like, what is his name? I was just watching it the other day. Rob, we were just talking about him the other day, the comedian.
Oh, D.L. Hughley.
People like him, like, nowhere remotely around everybody else, practicing social distancing and everything else, and he catches it. So that probability incurred with sports. So you have a sporting figure that's doing everything he needs to do to stay out of the way, social distancing, sanitizing, and doing what he has to do, and then he catches it.
Yeah.
That's the first strike. His second strike is going to be, because it's such a severe respiratory situation, he's going to lose lung capacity. So he's going to lose the ability to form at full capacity. So even if he does get to play, he or she, I don't want to be discriminatory, whoever does catch it, there's going to be a limitation to their ability to perform at 100%.
Yes, I'm seeing, I saw a news, it was actually a doctor on CNN. It wasn't Dr. Gupta, but I think it was someone who was just filling in over the weekend. I forget the young lady's name, but she had actually mentioned that folks who actually recovered from COVID-19 in March are still experiencing some of the symptoms even to this day. Yeah, I mean, we're talking 4 months now, carrying that on. And again, people forget this is what they call a novel virus. This is something that nobody really knows anything. So, you know, first of all, you see a vaccine being, you know, there's a race to the finish line for someone to develop, you know, a vaccine with this. You put all those factors together, you know, with the variables, and really I think at the end of the day, the equation really is social distancing. And it's interesting, Elijah, you brought up a really good point. And I think, Mike, to the issue that you brought up, a concern that you brought up about LeBron, you know, LeBron James, or what happens if he gets hurt and he's done everything that he's supposed to do. He practices social distancing, but one thing that LeBron does not have any control over is what, a teammate may do, or what someone on somebody else's team may do. And this is interesting too. Now let's talk about this. We're all guys, and you know, I know your audience is probably 75% men, male or demographics. So let's be frank. You know, we're talking about NBA players, and you're talking, you know, them being in a bubble with probably no family members, no wives, no children there, you know. No girlfriends there, no side chicks there. You know, you're talking grown.
No recreational activity
right,
going on.
Right, exactly. So, you know, you're gonna lock these guys up for 3 months. And to your point, Mike, for 3 months, they're going to be disciplined enough not to seek out recreational. These guys can't even, you know, figure out how to post something on Instagram correctly without getting themselves in hot water. So, you know, so you're asking a lot. And again, you're asking a lot of young guys to come out and show a lot of restraints that even some of the best of us cannot do. Hell, our servicemen can't even do it. So it's, it's going to be interesting to see. I'm not saying that it can't be done. But again, sometimes, you know, the ideals that are constructed out of the ivy walls or the boardroom or on a Zoom call nowadays, don't necessarily play out the way we think that they should play out or necessarily how they will play out.
I think there was an Instagram model already who tweeted that she already got
idea. Did you see that? Yep, I was just about to say there was a girl who went viral today saying that someone invited her to the bubble, and she was joking about it because she had, in the reply she was talking about her and whoever it was were joking about how she went viral over it. But yes, it has already happened. Like even though it's a joke, it has already happened. Like of course it happened already. Like it's the crazy thing is when we're talking about putting an asterisk on it, we go back to that, right? And you say injuries, you know, we talk about, you know, people get hurt in the playoffs all the time. Yeah, sure. But how often would three or four players get hurt in a playoff series? You know what I mean? Like that's what we're probably looking at. Like the Kings right before they left had three or four players get test positive. So you're talking about guys in a bubble. One guy gets it, two or three and maybe more guys are getting it because he's going to spread it before he even knows it. So even if they follow, like Walt said, even if they follow and do everything right, someone gets it, one person messes up, could infect 15 to 20 other people, and those people can infect 20 to 30 other people, you know what I mean? And then that's how outbreak, that's literally how this virus has worked and how it has spread, because you think you're safe because you're in a bubble, and that's not actually how it works. So that's where the asterisk comes in, was what if the Bucks in the finals, Giannis – not, or maybe Giannis doesn't get it, but Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, and Brooke Lopez get it. That's a big shift. You know what I mean? That's a different ball game that you're looking at. And then you kind of – because even during the Warriors run, like the Warriors had like one player of each series that they had get hurt. It was like Mike Conley. Yeah. It wasn't helping them win that series anyway. But like it was like Mike Conley, then the next round it was someone, then the next round it was someone. But it was never like multiple guys were out. Right. You know what I mean? At the same time, I mean, even the Raptors last championship, Clay played. I'm not saying there's an asterisk on the Raptors.
Why'd you even bring that up, man?
But I'm saying even the Raptors only missed KD for majority of that series. Only played against a KD-less Warrior team, and Clay was missed like a game and a half essentially. I guess two games because he missed a quarter of a game and whatnot. But like even then, that's not nearly as significant as you losing three to four guys as you would possibly lose with the coronavirus type situation. And that's where it gets iffy to me. And then, especially in the state that they're in, I just don't.
Yeah. And Rob, you bring up a really good point about you can do everything right, but if your teammate messes this up, you could get it messed up too. And I think that is also a big argument against these people who don't want to wear a mask. And they try to steal from the abortion movement, and they say, my body, my choice, right? Well, it's not really your body, your choice. It's your body plus the people around you. Like, that's why this is such a big deal. It's really, it has to be a group collective effort by everyone really in the entire country. And when 40% of people are not on board with that, like, you're going to see these spikes. So, yeah, it's tough.
And they're all on, and really, if you look at it here, they're all of them are on the same team. I mean, essentially with the Reddit is a high price intramural program. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where everyone is on the, everyone's on the same, pretty much everyone's on the same team for the most part, other than, when they suit up, you know what I mean? You know, it's almost like, shirts and skins or red shirts and white shirts. But for the most part, they're all in the same, you know, they're all in the same bubble. But another piece too, when we're talking about the integrity of the game, you know, again, growing up, I grew up as a Sixers fan. And one of the things, you know, watching the 76ers and of course, if the Sixers didn't make it, you know, it was anybody who played Boston. Well, you know, watching the Boston Celtics, you know, and Larry Bird and Robert Parrish and the greats that they had on that team. One thing that we all knew is that, you know, you better handle business on your home court, because we knew if you went up to the Boston Garden. Now, remember, you know, how hot it, you know, how hot it gets. And, of course, we had a little rain here today that kind of gave us some relief here in the Northeast. But in Boston, it gets extremely hot in June. And back in those days, the Boston Garden didn't even have any air conditioning. And they had a lot of dead spots. So and they had a lot of fans who weren't always the nicest people. They weren't even nice. And some of you read some of the things that Bill Russell said. They weren't even nice to their own players, let alone to opposing players. So it was a very hostile environment. And that gave the Boston Celtics a huge advantage. And one of the reasons why they won so many world championships, you know, same thing with the Warriors, you know, the modern day Warriors, when they played in, you know, Oakland, you know, how crazy that crowd was. If you look at the Cleveland Cavaliers when LeBron came back. So that's one thing that we won't see under this bubble. You know, you won't see that the fans getting behind, you know, their particular players. You can't pump in crowd noise, you know, because it just won't work. So I think, you know, home field advantage is another piece that, you know, you can't gauge and you can't account for. And, you know, and right now I think too, analytics, I think all that goes out of the window because, you know, some guys' numbers are clearly different, you know, on their home courts as they are, you know, on away court. So, you know, I think it'd be real interesting, but I'm kind of erring on the thought that I don't believe that it's going to happen.
And how many teams, like, you know, how many teams finish a season looking one way and then they go and then the next season happens? It might be a lot of the same guys, but they're just playing totally different. Well, that's what this is essentially going to be, right? They haven't played in 4 months. That's essentially an entire offseason. Like, I think you have to throw a lot of what we saw in the regular season out the window.
Yeah. Right.
Well, there's also another X factor as well. Just going back on what you said, Mike, or either Elijah, that asymptomatic person, the one that don't show signs, he affects other people. And then a couple of those out of the ration gets exposed and they are asymptomatic. So now you're starting to spread an epidemic and people get infected, and then it gets later into the season, then it becomes inflamed and full-blown, and you don't know until you're one of the teams deep in the playoffs or making a run for it. And like you said, your potential superstar players are now taken out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And I don't want it to seem like we're like fear-mongering here of the coronavirus, but I mean, this is how it works, right? Like, you know, you got 22 teams of 15 players all in one area, and I mean, technically they're in a bubble, but I don't know if you guys have seen the videos that these players are posting. They're interacting with each other, like within teams. They have social lounges, they're out by the pool and fishing and stuff like that. Like, sure, they're, you know, the outside world may not be able to get to them, but they are, you know, mingling amongst each other, and a lot of them were just testing positive for the coronavirus just a couple of weeks ago. So that's the thing that concerns me the most. You know, I'm hoping that for their sake, everybody stays as healthy as possible. I'm sure a couple of cases will pop up here and there. But I think even Adam Silver said it himself. I think he's prepared to have the league stopped if necessary. So I don't think he's too optimistic about it, like, or being blind about it, at least, about the potential ramifications that this will have. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But assuming everything goes okay, who do you guys have winning it all when the NBA restarts?
I'll start. I'm thinking, assuming everything goes all right, no one has any, you know, unforeseen issues. I got to say the Milwaukee Bucks. I'm just going to just go with the straight, you know, data on this because I think everyone's kind of like on a level playing field. You know, there's no, as we mentioned, there's no home court advantage for no one necessarily. And quite frankly, they were the best team when we closed down. And quite frankly, they have the best player in the league in Giannis. So, you know, I'm rooting for my Sixers, but, you know, if you're asking me to just kind of look at things, just kind of being all equal, I would say the Milwaukee Bucks.
What you thinking, Walt?
I can concur with that. Same thing.
Milwaukee Bucks, okay. Well, we both had the Lakers the last time we did our prediction episode. So, Mike, anything change there?
No, nothing changing. Actually, I just watched the LeBron highlight film today. It was like a 20-minute video on YouTube. That guy's so good, man.
Yeah.
It's really sad that he, you know, really sad for us East Coast guys that he moved to the Lakers because we don't get to watch him as much. He almost forgot about just how special he is. So I'm sticking with the Lakers and beating Toronto in the finals.
And you look at LeBron, you know, with what in a shortened season, what is this supposed to go, 3 months, guys? I haven't been following along.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So I mean, it's like 8 games and then playoffs.
8 games. Okay, yeah. So you put a LeBron. You know, I mean, you know, I've had concerns about his, you know, his age in going into things, but you put him in it. And he's coming off of what 4 months of rest. You put him on a, you know, on a sprint. You know, I mean, it's hard to bet against him. I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's not looking at more than 30 games, probably, right? Because depending on how far they go. Eight regular season games, you're probably looking at, if they win a title, you're not looking at more than 25 games, I would say, in the playoffs. So, you know, at max, you're looking at maybe 35 games for him. And LeBron in a 35-game stretch is scary. That is something to be worried about off of 4 months of rest.
Yep.
Fair enough. So that wraps up pretty much everything that we had for today's show. Did you guys have any final thoughts? Anything you wanted to share about the upcoming podcast? You guys are debuting this Friday.
That's right. We'll be debuting this Friday. We're excited to come back, and we really appreciate you, you know, having this like an opportunity to kind of cross promo our show. But the other piece too, you know, always tune in on social media. I'm live on a new site. It's a Twitter alternative. It's called Parler, P-A-R-L-E-R. And again, same username at Rob Cooper Jr. Feel free to follow me for some of my political commentary. We'll also be sharing this podcast there. So any questions, comments, any guest suggestions, we'd be more than happy to hear that. And also, of course, Instagram, you can reach me at, again, at Rob Cooper Jr. So yeah, we're excited. You know, we're excited to be on your platform, and you guys are doing an amazing job, and you're, you know, creating a lot of buzz in the community, and we're just happy to be a part of that, and hopefully we can see this thing grow to a level where you know, we'll give a voice to the voiceless.
Yeah, definitely want to thank you guys for inviting us on to branch out our brand. You guys are doing a tremendous job. Young, vibrant energy. Topics are on point, man. And it's great discussion every time I turn and listen to it. And look forward to having this great adventure with you guys.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Again, for those of you guys tuning in, their first episode under All in Politics will be coming on Friday. So stay tuned. Their feed is already on Apple or Spotify. So if you follow them on Reel to Reel, you're good to go. They'll now be coming to our YouTube channel as well. So this episode will be on their feed as well under their playlist. It'll be also under ours as well. So you can find this podcast episode on either of those. And Mike, any other things with the network going on that you want to bring up?
Yeah, so just make sure you guys are checking out the website as well, allinnetwork.net. There you can find links as well to all of our podcasts, so our podcast, the Rain and Bliss Show. Also debuting next Friday, Real Deal Radio with Cody Deal. He just recorded his first episode today, so we're really excited about that. And then you also have links to this All In Politics show. So make sure you go allinnetwork.net. We're also posting articles on there all the time. Eli is working through his redrafts of the 2010s. He just posted 2011 a little bit ago. So that's the
Kawhi. Who else was in that one? Kawhi, JJ
Redick. Kyrie, Klay Thompson.
Yeah,
those guys.
That's what I was thinking of.
So yeah, so check that out. And then make sure you are subscribing to the YouTube channel. And I'm also going to have in the description of this video is where you can find links as well to the All In Politics show.
And for those of you listening in on audio, make sure that you download as well, download the episodes, and also check it out on YouTube. Really excited about the two new shows debuting on Friday. So like Mike said, make sure you guys subscribe so you get that notification pop up to let you know when we're airing. And also, we have a raffle running right now on our Twitter page, @all_in_pod, where we are raffling off a chance for you to come on the show for a segment, ask us a few questions, get a chance to chat it up with us, and also win some of the free merchandise that is on our Teespring store. So make sure you check that out as well. But a donation as low as 99 cents a month can get you a ticket entered into the raffle for a good cause. So thank you guys for showing all your support so far. We appreciate you guys being all in with us. And thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. You guys have a great night.
Thanks, guys. You know, man.